Hi, and welcome to the Provider Podcast by NHS Providers. My name is Adam Brimlow, and I'll be leading us through what winter has in store for the NHS, alongside our annual NHS Winter Watch campaign. In this episode, we speak to Chris Hobson, NHS Providers Chief Executive, on what trusts are currently experiencing, the impact that misinformation and COVID denial has on trusts and frontline staff, and how trusts are working together using mutual aid to deal with these unprecedented times. We hope you find this a useful discussion. You can join in the conversation by following us on Twitter and LinkedIn at NHS Providers, and keep up to date on future episodes by subscribing to the podcast. Thank you. So, Chris, in recent weeks, there was quite a lot of talk about a potential perfect storm, lots of factors potentially coming together, make things difficult. And so it's certainly proving what come together to make winter so difficult for trusts.
Well, you're right, Adam. When we launched our kind of Winter Watch series this year, which we do every year, just looking at how winter's going to go, that was absolutely the risk that we identified. It was effectively there were a combination of a number of different things coming together which could make life difficult. So effectively, what you've got is the normal winter emergency demand. That's quite often dependent upon how cold it is. But the good news is less winter flu this year. That's a global phenomenon. There's one set of patients. The second is we knew we had a number of patients who'd care had been delayed from the first phase of COVID, which was really important to ensure they got their treatment. And then the third issue was that we knew we could get very significant numbers of COVID-19 patients. And so it's proved in terms of particularly with this new variant, which I think has dramatically changed the rules of the game. And then at the fourth element was that we absolutely knew we had to do this vaccination campaign. And so it's proved. So you've got all of those four sets of patients just at the point when you've got a really tired workforce who effectively have been at it all year. And before that, to be frank, you know, we know that there was this capacity demand mismatch, which was asking a huge amount of our staff. So put all of that together, and that's why we said it was a perfect storm. And I think there's a real nervousness that we are now right in the mid perfect storm.
So it sounds like pressure upon pressure. Where are we now in terms of increasing infections and admissions? And what signs, if any, can we detect that when we might be able to turn a corner soon?
Well, I think there's no doubt if this week, I think two or three things have kind of come forward that I think have, if anything, added to the concern. So there is a real sense, isn't there, that the infection rates have been rocketing really rapidly. And I think the nervousness is what we saw in the first phase was that they came down really quickly. A public health colleague I was speaking to this morning said, you know, the rates almost collapse when you've got over the peak, but that's not going to happen by the looks of it now. I think they're going to come down more slowly. And we've spoken a lot in the last few couple of weeks really about the southeast, London and the east of England. And what we're now seeing is those infection rates rising very rapidly in the Midlands, the northwest and the southwest. And that's really worrying because trusts in the Midlands and the north have got significant numbers of patients still in hospital from the second surge. And we know that the southwest has got a smaller bed base and is therefore less able to absorb pressure than other regions. So effectively what I think this looks like is clearly we were all of us in the NHS hoping for what I would describe as a kind of shorter, sharper peak where effectively you'd crest it in, say, mid to late January, but it now looks like that peak for demand may actually now be pushed into February. And if that's right, then that's going to mean a higher level and a more extended pressure on the NHS that we might have been expecting even a week ago. One final question, Adam, which is, you know, is there a silver lining in the cloud? And the answer is clearly is, you know, the vaccines do offer us a way out of this. And that's why we're so focused on vaccination. But the real issue is how we get over this incredibly difficult period. And Simon Stevens said that it's an incredibly serious situation. Chief exec I was speaking to last week, one of our outstanding trust chief execs, said he'd never seen pressure like it in a 40-year NHS career. So this is really, really hard.
It's really striking listening to commentary around the pressures that very often it's framed in terms of what's going on in hospitals,
particularly intensive care units, but really what we're seeing is pressures right across other parts of the provider sector as well, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really important to say that, because actually you can see pressures wherever you look. So I think in one sense, helpfully, kind of our focus has been on ambulances as well, particularly kind of recently. And we know there are some really difficult issues in the ambulance sector in terms of, for example, ambulance handover delays, which nobody wants. Hospitals work really hard to avoid them. But there's a real problem here, which is that if you get ambulances standing on a hospital ramp and they can't get out, then that's out to get to the next patient. That's a real issue. And it's got so serious, I think, in London, I think, as you know, that we've now got firefighters and police helping out driving ambulances. Community services, when I talk to community chief execs, they're really clear about how incredibly busy they are in terms of, for example, what we're trying to stand up at real pace is enabling people to be discharged as quickly as possible. The so-called hospital at home type services, in other words, discharging perhaps higher acuity patients than you might normally and having them looked after by community nurses. Again, that's really, really busy. And I'm again talking to mental health colleagues. They are incredibly busy as well. So wherever you cross the service, it's absolutely full pelt and some. And in particular, I think the real issue here is the impact that this is having on our staff. You know, we're having to ask staff to postpone leave. We're having to ask them to extend shifts. We're having to ask them to take extra shifts. There is a huge, huge burden going on our staff. And certainly when I talk to our member chief execs, that's one thing that's very much.
Yeah, and we've been hearing really compelling accounts, haven't we, on broadcasts, on social, about the sorts of pressures staff are facing, what they've been having to deal with really for month after month now. That's come through very powerfully. And yet at the same time, we know that there are some people out there who are almost in denial about the impact of COVID, or are suggesting that the pressures aren't really that great. How much of a frustration is that to the trust leaders you talk to when they're discussing what their staff are up against?
It's a huge frustration. And again, I thought Simon Stevens got this absolutely right last week when he effectively said it's not just a frustration, it's potentially dangerous, because one of the very important debates we're having in relation to the restrictions, and you can't help thinking that listening to some of these people saying what they're saying, you do wonder what goes straight through my head when I hear some of it is this having an impact on the compliance rates, which are the social contact, which couldn't be more important. And then I thought, again, what Simon said was, it's incredibly insulting to our staff who are working incredibly hard. And, you know, I mean, Adam, as you and I both know, we've had a couple of interesting debates with one of the people who's been at the forefront of this movement. And I have to tell you, I got incredibly frustrated when before Christmas, she was saying to me on the radio, oh, I've been talking to a couple of people. And actually, you know, we all know that NHS staff aren't that busy. And I have to tell you, I was hopping mad, because it's absolutely not true. There is, though, quite an interesting debate here, if you don't mind me saying, which I've been slightly airing on my Twitter feed, at Chris CEO Hobson. He's in the shameless plug.
I was waiting for that.
that actually, you know, one of the slight nervousnesses I've kind of got is, if you directly engage in the debate, are you legitimizing it? And I had a very interesting Twitter debate with one of our chairs about whether that was the right thing or the wrong thing to do. But as you and I know, I deliberately thread, which is a very long thread, over the weekend to answer every single one of the detailed points that I felt they had been making. I was gratified to see it's got over, I think, 1,500, lots of retweets. And I think that for me kind of said there is a need to identify appropriately where these people are getting this wrong. But I don't want to do it too much, because I think there's a danger of legitimizing. The first tweet in that thread I really liked, because to be frank, it was just a copy of the Times editorial from Saturday, where the Times editorial basically said, look, this has got to stop. It's one thing to have legitimate questions and scrutiny of what the arguments are. It's completely different to be basically pushing disinformation and distortions in the middle of a global pandemic, which actually could reduce vital compliance with social contact restrictions. So yeah, I'm pretty hopping mad about it. And I know, to be frank, a lot of our members are as well.
And this always comes round when we're describing the pressures and what can be done. It always seems to come round to the importance of compliance with the rules, observing social distancing, and doing everything we can to support the NHS in that way. But another feature of our NHS is the way in which it can coordinate and mobilize its resources so that trust can help each other through these difficult times. I know there's a lot of what people often refer to mutual aid going on. What actually is happening, Chris, in terms of the way trusts help each other and different parts of the system are helping each other out to get us through this crisis in a way that's peculiar to the NHS?
Can I shamelessly take that in two parts? Because I did want to have a quick go at that first bit about compliance. For me, I still don't think quite comes across is the degree to which this new variant has changed the rules of the game. And it is 50 to 70% more transmissible. And I do think there is some quite strong evidence emerging that actually rules that might have worked more effectively in the first phase might not work as effectively in this phase. And, you know, I think we've all seen the pictures, haven't we? I mean, you know, the FA Cup at the weekend, I thought was a really interesting one where you saw crowds of fans literally mashed behind barriers, really, really close to each other, welcoming teams coming to football grounds and groups of footballers effectively not socially distancing when they were celebrating afterwards. It just, you know, there's a real sense here of people not realizing, it feels to me, about how serious the situation is. And I thought it was great to see Chris Whitty out on Monday doing the media rounds, making it really clear that this kind of compliance issue is really important. So on the second bit of your question, which I think is absolutely right, is the mutual aid stuff. And I think what's really clear to us is that, and you get this really from lots of chief executives from the first phase, just saying about how effective this collaboration and working together, not just with their neighbour trust, but also in terms of working with the rest of their system, social care, primary care. It's very clear to us, particularly in places like the London, the South East and the East of England, the way in which people are either taking the region as a whole, like London, in terms of or in parts of a region to basically ensure that they're managing demand across a number of hospitals, because that's the best way of ensuring patients get the treatment that they need. So, advantage of a national health service. And just to make the point, Adam, I don't think we'd be in this position had we not created those regions with all of their appropriate infrastructure to help coordinate this activity. And certainly when I speak to people, they say that they feel that NHS England and improvement regional structure has come into its own when we need to do stuff like doing this mutual aid organisation.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about the difficulties, the pressures and the response, but of course what everyone is looking out for be out of this. What how do you see the third surge panning out over the coming weeks and the potential trajectory of the pandemic into relieving pressure on the NHS in a way that allows people to return to something closer to a normal way of life?
Well, clearly there is an issue, isn't there, in terms of the immediate issue in front of us is how do we get over the next, I don't know exactly how many weeks it's going to be, is it two, is it three, is it four, where we need to crest the peak of the third surge and come back down the other side. As I said, what worries me is that it looks like with the infection rates taking longer, that cresting is going to take longer than we might have originally thought. So my sense is that is going to be the immediate focus. It's going to really, really test us. You know, we are very, very tested at the moment, but it's clear that we are going to continue to see increases in admissions for at least, I would guess, at least a couple of weeks. So it is going to be very, very testing. Once we get over that and we get into the vaccinations, first of all, just to make the point, by the way, the vaccination should help us with that because people are becoming immune about, I think it's 3 weeks, isn't it, after they 2 to 3 weeks had their first vaccination. So look at the speed with which we're getting through those 80 pluses. If you look at the mortality rates about the people who are most at risk, it is the over 80s. So the more quickly that we can vaccinate those people, the more it will actually help us get over to the crest of that peak, because there should hopefully be fewer people in hospital. So once we've got through that, then I think we're into the sort of, so I think somebody I thought described it really, really well, which is there's a sprint to do that. That's really important to help us with current problems. What I think we're then looking is that longer term, more kind of marathon type of campaign on vaccinations, where we're going to need to take an appropriate amount of time over the rest of the year, as it were, to effectively get through as much of the population as possible. Clearly, we'll try and do it as fast as we can. And we've been set that helpful target in terms of mid-February for the JCVI. I think it's 12.5 million most at-risk people. But then we're into everybody else. So there will come a point, won't there, where effectively that will then, when we've got to the right level of vaccination, we should be able to start reducing the restrictions. There will then be, though, a really interesting set of issues for the NHS in terms of how we allow our staff to recover, how quickly we can get any really high-end emergency and surgery done or cancer surgery that we've not been able to do. I'd hope we'd really get to that in a question of days, not weeks. But then there's also then really big issues like what does a long-term plan to, for example, deal with the extra mental health demand that we've got coming and also to deal with the elective surgery recovery that we're going to do. These are all really big issues that we're going to need to turn to when we've got over this immediate peak.
So, Chris, during the course of the pandemic, and perhaps even more so during these last winter weeks, we've seen NHS providers very much on the front foot in a prominent role in the media, yourself and Saffron Caudery, featuring in loads of broadcast interviews, television and radio. Very striking that you've been to the fore. Why is it that you felt it necessary to take up that role and set out, articulate perspectives of members? And how long do you think that will continue in terms of the prominence of NHS providers as a key commentator in terms of what's going on in this in the NHS during the pandemic?
Well, so we're doing this podcast as part of our Winter Watch series, aren't we? Which effectively feels to me to be a perfect representation of what we're trying to do here, which is we're trying to provide calm, sober, detailed insight and evidence about what trusts are doing. And I think for me, what's happened various, particularly at the really important points of the pandemic, so right at the beginning and particularly in the sort of second surge, now in the third surge, is there's effectively a gap, I think, which is there's some, you know, quite helpful, number 10 Downing Street led press conferences that tend to concentrate at the high level of things. And quite understandably, that's what they're there for, putting across a political message. And then what you have, and obviously public health messages as well, but inevitably it's politicians supported by the Chris Whitters and the Patrick Balances of the world, putting across those top line messages. What you've then got is quite a lot of really quite distressing and really quite difficult, but really heartfelt and just incredibly moving, actually, frontline testimony. And we felt there was a gap between the two, which effectively was that somebody needed to get out there and say, in a calm and sober way, this is what the 217 trusts who employ 800,000 of the 1.3 million staff, who are normally treating, you know, a million patients every 36 hours, this is what they're trying to do, and effectively do deliberately a warts and all, this is what's going well, this is what's perhaps going less well, and do it in an appropriate level of detail so that people could understand what was going on. So when they see, as they did this week, Southend Hospital's oxygen system under real pressure, well, what does that mean? How serious is that? Is that something we should be worried about or not? And we felt there was a very important gap to fill in terms of that detailed information. So thanks to the brilliant NHS Providers Communications team led by one Rimolo and Saffron, who I have to say is absolutely brilliant, and I think we've been great pairing together, is we've been trying to fill that gap. And our intention, I think, is to carry on filling it for as long as it is needed in terms of if there is a need for a calm and authoritative voice out there saying this is what trusts are trying to do, that's our job. And I am very pleased that members have very consistently said to us, our members, our trust chairs and chief executives have been saying to us, they think it's a really important job to do. And thankfully, they think we've done that job well.
Chris, many thanks for that. Great to talk to you and keep it up.
And thanks, Adam, for this and also for the fantastic work of you and your wider team.